chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves.
All right. Hi, everybody. My name is LaDan Kamfar. I have been blessed with all of these sessions for about a year that we kicked it off in November of 2017. It's unbelievable that's been a year that we get together every single month, right? And supporting and celebrating and energizing, that's our mission. So without further ado, I would like to introduce you to my amazing friend. She's the CEO and co-founder of Technology Partners, Lisa has been an amazing partner in the past with my company and in many of the companies over here. She is an advocate for women in tech. She's an advocate for technology. And I'm so glad that she's here for us today to moderate the panel. So Lisa has co-founded the company with her husband, Greg, for over 25 years in St. Louis community. And she's been actually at the White House advocating for St. Louis in the past. And you see her moderating so many panels. So I'm so glad that she had time today to be here. All right, without further ado, let's celebrate Lisa.
Well, welcome. I am so humbled and honored to be facilitating this panel this evening with some amazing accomplished women in tech. So if you guys would come on forward, Teresa, you want to come on? This is Teresa Sanzantara, and she is the CIO for a local pharma company here in St. Louis. Michelle Kaufman, VP of Technology for DMI here in St. Louis. Petra Volkart is with Bayer. Holly Reinen, RGAX, she's VP of Innovation for RGAX. And then Jennifer Hopper, who is VP of Technology for MasterCard Labs. Welcome, ladies. I feel very honored to be in your presence. You guys are all such accomplished women in technology. And I know all of you, and I know that we are going to have an incredibly rich conversation this evening. So let's just go on and get started. What I would like for you each to do is just talk a little bit about your background, okay? And it can be education, experience, and talk to us a little bit about how you got to where you from here to there. Was it an aspirational goal of yours to be a CIO or vice president of tech? And just talk to us about that. Teresa, you want to start?
Sure. Teresa Sanzantara, and I've spent a good deal of my career moving up through the ranks. So I started from the ground up in information technology. My education background is international business, and I have an MBA. I did not aspire to the role of CIO. It took a lot of cajoling on the part of a number of people to pull me up into the role. By nature, I'm a builder, and I really liked the role of building technology solutions for businesses. And it was a big move for me to agree that maybe the role of an executive in technology was the right role for me. once I made the commitment to rise into the leadership position, I found it very richly and rewarding beyond what I had expected. The ability to sit at the table with other executives and solve business problems at even a bigger level means almost as much to me as having started in the technology role and building from a technology perspective.
So I'm Michelle Kaufman. I work for Distribution Management, and I'm the VP of Technology there, like you said. And I started out as a software developer, and I also had no plans or inkling of moving up. I was really happy as a programmer. I still think I would be really happy as a programmer. I loved it. It's great fun for those of you that are programmers. I loved it. I was about 26, and I was on a really large project when the project lead abruptly left. And so they tapped me to move into the leadership role, which was a surprise to me. But I liked it, and that worked out really well. So like you, I was like pulled into it. And then at some point, I was in charge of all the software development at my company, and the CEO approached me about, he asked me if I was interested in running the whole department. And I said no. I like software. I'm really good at software. I don't know the infrastructure side. And I said, no, I'm not interested. And a couple months went by, and I kind of saw who would probably get the job. And I started to get worried because I didn't think he was a good fit for the company. And I did not think that that would, so I started to get really worried. And I finally just kind of went home one night, and I literally on a piece of paper kind of drew the chart that I would organize if I was in charge of the whole department, who I would have where. And I started to think about how would I make decisions in areas that I'm not in charge of. So I kind of went through the exercise of figuring out, well, what would it be like to be in charge? And by the end of that evening, I was like, oh my gosh, I can totally do this. Like, I mean, it was just this revelation. And I went back in, and I think the very next day I gave a pitch to the CEO about why I thought I should be in charge of the department, and it worked out. I mean, within not too long, I was. And so I also had to be, I mean, and that kind of reluctance, you know, statistically, women, you know, if any of you read Lean In, I'm not going to get the stat right, but it's about women have to feel like 95% qualified before they raise their hand statistically. And men do not feel that way. They raise their hand whether they even know what the job title meant. And so that is something that I think we all can just think a little bit more about and just stop and question, why am I so hesitant about this? What, you know, because I've thrived in the role and I really enjoy it and I do think it suits me well, so.
Hi, I'm Petra Volkaert. I lead the global marketing and commercial operations IT team at Bayer. I do not have an IT background. So I didn't start as a developer or in any technical job. Actually, my first degree is around linguistics. So I'm a translator. I'm passionate about languages. The more I can speak of them, the better. And so I have what I used to call a bit of an eclectic background. So I graduated as an interpreter. I moved to I'm Belgian originally, so I moved to Spain. Tried to find a job there, but I didn't like any of the ones I actually saw. And so I started studying business administration, got myself into various roles in marketing, customer operations, sales, various countries as well, and started learning a lot about different perspectives and different functions within overall, you know, your average multinational. And so I love process as well, and I love simplifying things, and I have a passion for making things more simple. And so I got myself into a lot of roles which were more around business analysis. And as you may know that when you're a business analyst, you get in touch with a lot of technology. And so bit by bit, I got closer and closer to the technology and IT teams as well, up to a day that one of the IT directors said, hey, you appear to know a lot about the business. You know, we need some people in IT that actually know about the business and that can tell us what we need to build. I said, IT? I mean, what? Why would I go into IT? It's like, that's really not... No, really, try it. So I did, and I loved it because I found a spot there that I really enjoyed. And it wasn't the translating languages, but it was translating business requirements into IT requirements, which is what we do every single day. And so that's really how I grew up into kind of going into the IT direction. I've been doing so for probably the last 6-7 years. And so what I now, you know, when people ask me about my background, I used to say it was eclectic because I couldn't really explain it. It's not the traditional path. I call it diverse because it does benefit a lot just knowing the different angles of the enterprise and using that into the conversations. I absolutely enjoy my role, and just by enjoying it and making proposals on how to do things better, I appear to get the next promotion and the next offer. And I also got push from some of the mentors that I met along my career who said, hey, why don't you try that? Yeah, really, me? Do you think I can do that? Yeah, try it. And so I don't think it was intentional at all. But over the years, it became clearer what I love doing. And that would be one of the advice that I have. Don't spend time doing things you don't like. Just look for what you love doing, because if you love it, you'll be good at it. That's kind of my journey.
Great advice. Holly?
Oh, that's a tough act to follow. So I'm a bit of rinse and repeat from the first two stories. It took me a while even to figure out what I wanted to study. I was quite directionless, and I had a cousin. And technology was new at that point. We were hearing about IT to study it, and there were jobs, but didn't really understand what it meant and the versatility that could come along with a career. So I didn't entertain it. But she was a recent graduate, was loving her first days out. So after exploring engineering and then a switch to teaching, I moved into MIS at that time, Management Information Systems. My primary language I studied was COBOL. Very excited to get my first COBOL programming job out of school. Showed up to the first day and they said, you know, curveball, we have this new team, we need to staff it. Would you be willing to just learn Java on the job? And I was like, sure. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me. The stars started aligning at that point. I had wonderful leadership throughout my entire career. I loved programming as well. I loved flying under the radar. I loved having tasks that I could churn out and the fast pace of accomplishment that you could receive, the tight-knit groups that we worked within. And several years into my current company, one of my mentors there said, you know, you started getting into this more client, high-touch aspect of the job. You really flourish. I think you should entertain project management. And I could not have been more offended. I mean, a project manager, they're like the root of all evil, right? So what am I failing? Is this your way to weed me out? So I did a lot of soul searching as well. And luckily had a lot of very patient people and leaders that I could go to, spent time thinking it through. But I also, it's just this, do I actually abandon what I'm doing and try something different? And again, turned out to be the best thing that ever happened. And again, it started lining up organic opportunities. And along the way, I think the thing that has always helped me in any position I've had is just a really strong desire to build trust. I'm a very transparent person, not in an abrasive way, but in a way that I know that I'm going to give my best to that person, and I know that I can ensure they know I will give them my best. So I've just continued along a pretty standard path through my strong relationship building before trying to bridge the gap of IT and business was so heavily talked about. I think that was just something that came easily to me. I worked in Europe a lot and with Asia a lot through my company, had a lot of international experience, and it just brought me side projects, and that got me exposure to additional people, and over time that has just brought me the opportunities that have landed me where I am today.
Jennifer Hopper, I'm with MasterCard, and similar to these ladies' stories, I have a very unintentional journey into IT. I was a biochem major at now Missouri S&T and with a pre-med emphasis. I graduated and told my parents, hey, there's this cool thing called gap year, but I'm going to do that now. And they said, no, you're not. You can not go to med school for a year, but you'll get a job. I thought, well, that's not my cool parent response that I thought I was going to get. So I had a couple of girlfriends that worked for Accenture for IT consulting. They said, hey, it's great. You can come and travel for a year, and they'll fly you everywhere, and it'll be fun. And I thought, okay, I'll do that for a year, and then I'll go to med school. And that will be my plan, and it'll work out perfectly. And knowing that my MCAT scores were good for 5 years, I thought, well, I'm enjoying this. I have a 5-year timeline that I can kind of attest to. And 1 year went by, 2 years went by, 3 years went by. And on my 5th year, I was thinking, I like this. It's freedom, and I'm enjoying it. And story goes on. I enjoy my time at Accenture. I stay there for 14 years through a senior manager. And then life happens. I decided to stay home. I stayed home for 2.5 years with my children as a stay-at-home mom. And then I decided 5 years ago it was time for me to re-enter the workforce. So at that point, I thought, well, I named my top three companies. MasterCard was one of them, and went back into searching for my right fit. There's a gentleman by the name of Gary Vonderhaar. He hired me into Accenture over 20 years ago, and he is also a Missouri S&T alum, so I reached out to him. Unbeknownst to me, he had climbed the ranks, and so it was a very good mentor for me to have. So a very unintentional landing spot for me, and similar, I love to problem solve. I'm a people manager at MasterCard. I love seeing the team just grow, and my boss sits across the aisle from me, and many times I look at him, I say, I get to lead these people? Are you sure that you want me to lead these people? Because it's just a phenomenal group of individuals that I'm very blessed to have the interactions with every day.
Wow. There is so much here, truly, that we can unpack. So as you guys heard, not one of these ladies started out saying, I want to be top in my field in IT. But the thing, some of the threads that I heard were each of you guys were presented opportunities. And I'm sure that there was a little bit of apprehension. I mean, sometimes, you know, Holly, when you were, you know, your boss said, hey, I think you'd be a good project manager. You know, I mean, that probably didn't feel great, but, you know, you went for it. And Petra, you too. You know, so sometimes just taking that step, that first step, I think is really key. And I say all the time to young people, it doesn't matter what your job is. You can glean things from each thing that you do. Do not discount that, because it's like a snowball, right? You take those things with you as you go up the career, your career ascent. The other thing that I heard from a couple of you is that you did have people speak into you to say, hey, you know, I think maybe Petra, you know the business. I think you'd be really good over here in IT. So you had people speak into you. So lots of common themes here. Let's talk about, and some of you guys kind of talked about this. Jennifer, you talked about Gary. I love Gary Vonderhaar, by the way. So some of you talked about mentors and that sort of thing, but people that kind of spoke into you. But talk to us about, I'm sure that there have been things that you've had to overcome, really difficult things. Can you talk about one of those things? A couple of you talk about one of those things and how you overcame it. Petra, you want to take it? All right. Thank you. Thank you for raising your hand.
So one of my former managers said, and it kind of stuck with me, was on the journey towards senior leadership, there's two critical moments in life that you need to conquer. The first one is learn how to delegate. And so there's this step from being really, really good at your job and loving what you do as an individual to going and leading a team. And that means you need to be able to let go, and you need to be able to trust that others will do things on your behalf. The second one is you need to be able to inspire people. So once that you get a bigger group of people that are looking up at you, not just direct reports, but also parts of the organization, what's that message that you want to convey that is going to convince people to follow you? Because you can't always trust on just directly ordering them. They need to be able to see the light and do things for themselves. You can't always be there to hold their hands. And for me, that was one of the challenges that I thought about a lot. And I even had a mentor and a coach that I reached out to. And I remember the first session we had, I said, can you teach me how to inspire? And he was like, I don't think I can teach you that, but I can tell you some tricks. And so we went through this path, and it took a few months. But really what I learned is really to be myself, be transparent, show your values so that people see you who you are, and then have a very strong direction and vision of where you want to go. And communicate that in a, I would say, inspiring way, but learn how to communicate about it in simple words, but strong visuals, and that's really how you get people there. That was one of the challenges that I had, was, you know, teach me how to be inspirational. I don't know how to do that, right? And You learn by practice.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And really, leader is really a broad term. You know, really what a leader is someone who influences others to action and to results, right? So it's like learning how to do that, you know, is sometimes really a challenge. But I love what you talked about, you know, your values and letting them see and trust you, because then people will want to follow someone like that. Anybody else want to tackle that question? Holly or Jennifer?
I'll be brief. I think it's kind of cyclical for me, but it aligns to where I'm making changes, but it can be very difficult to allow myself to be vulnerable, especially at those points where I feel uncertain. I almost have this overcompensation to feel like I need to know the answer to everything. I need to prove that those around me can be confident in me. I honestly can come across confrontational in those moments. And it's something I really have to coach myself on and understand that I'm always going to be surrounded by a lot of people that bring a lot of value, and the sum of us is better than me individually. And it's okay to show my vulnerability, to say I don't know, and to look for direction from everybody around us.
That's great advice.
Yeah. So along the common theme is, I think my biggest barrier that I've had to overcome is having the confidence to take the risk, or having confidence in myself. It's hard when you're in the room with all of these smart, intelligent, ambitious people, and it's just, I belong here. I have a seat at the table. I have a voice, and I need to speak. There's the consistent theme that I get back from my management is, you need to talk more. You need to use your voice. One-on-one, you're great, but in the room, you clam up, and it's okay to speak, even if it's, you know, there's folks there that are your level or above. So it's just having that confidence to overcome that fear.
That is great advice. Do you ever, though, Jennifer, do you ever say, let me think about it and get back to you? Because sometimes think time is really good, right?
Yeah.
And just, you know, because I've had to do that, too. And you want to have a thoughtful response, right? And the other thing that I've often heard is, you know, you have somebody come to you with a question or a challenge. It's like, well, what do you think? What do you think we should do? Throw the ball back, right? So let's go on to another question. Teresa, did you have any mentors? It could be a professor. It could be a family member that you want to talk about a little bit. How important is mentorship? Let's talk about that.
You know, I think it's huge. So I firmly believe that when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. You have to be very careful and watchful, because the people that you necessarily will choose may not choose you, but watch for the ones that are choosing you because they have an interest in you. So the same thing is true for taking assignments. If you are approached with taking an assignment, that means somebody's talking about you. So take the assignment. It may not seem like the most logical thing to you, but it is probably in your career interest to go ahead and have the faith that if somebody's had the courage to ask you to take the assignment, they believe in you, so believe in yourself. So at every turn, I've found that person that I needed to find to get me to that next thing and get me through that next assignment. Probably one of the best mentors I had was my boss. It won't always be your boss, by the way. And sometimes it won't be your boss because your boss has a different role. But for me, it was my boss, and he did an amazing job getting me ready to take the reins when he chose to retire. And I had the same reaction. I'm not ready. I haven't done X, Y, Z. And he's like, but Teresa, you know everything you need to know. You are fully equipped to do this. I needed to get out of my way. And probably that was the thing that I needed to be taught the best, was how to get out of my way. I was an exceptional performer, and I was known. If there was an impossible project, an impossible task, give it to Teresa. She'll figure it out. And I had to get out of that role. And he helped get me there and pushed me out of the nest a little bit, and even retired unexpectedly and left a void. So I had to step up into it. So I would say those people are huge. Your sponsors are huge. And if you don't know what a sponsor is, a sponsor can be really anybody who's talking to you. Generally, they're a higher level person within the organization and they're watching you. And when you're being talked about, they're talking about you. They're the people who are mentioning you for those special assignments. So I've been fortunate enough that I've done work outside of IT in addition to my successes within IT, that I have had sponsors in other functions. So again, don't just limit those things that you do to the work within IT or whatever technology area you're in. Branch out, and particularly if a sponsor is suggesting that you take something else, it's probably within your best interest to do so because it's that next level in your career.
That's great. Michelle, let's talk about, you had mentioned Sheryl Sandberg with the lean in, so I'm going to pick on you a little bit. There is just no way as a leader that you can know everything. So how have you, like throughout your career ascent, when you get to those areas that you're just not quite sure, are there groups that you lean into? Are there groups like this that you participate in? I mean, where do you go for some counsel or for some guidance?
Well, I would say in IT, I've never bought into the idea that it should be all top down, that I should know more than the people below me, than the people below me. In fact, I think in a lot of ways, you think about like your network engineers on the ground level, they know the most about that specific area. The people above them might have broader knowledge, but they have the deepest knowledge. Your software engineers know the most about their code and what it does. That ground level, holy cow, they are smart. They know their stuff. And then the layer above them actually often doesn't know quite as much and so on. So it's not that I have to know more and tell everyone how to do their job or how to do their technology. I need to be thinking bigger. I need to be thinking sideways and working with the rest of the organization and how they're using IT. So I think it's all about making a culture where you hire really smart people. You should be thrilled if the people working for you are actually smarter than you, right? That's a really good thing. So my whole thing is about building a culture where ideas are coming from the bottom up, from the top down, from sideways, and we're working together. So not knowing something specifically doesn't stress me out because I have a great team and we're going to talk together. You use vendors like you, right? You know, you use your vendors for all sorts of things. I love going to outside events and outside conferences, and I actually love sending my people to those too, because I think it's also about you can't be worried, oh no, they're going to talk to a recruiter and leave you. No. You know, you want to know that they're being invested in and they're excited and tell me and bring back ideas and share it with the rest of the team. And so that's how I've handled it. You use the entire network, and including things like this and peers and groups like that.
No, that's great. So all of you guys are here now, and you have access to these ladies up here. And I would just say lean into people, you know, when you have those questions. But great point. There's no way the people below you probably know more than you do, you know, about the specifics, right? I mean, we are big on being specialists. You know, being specialists, they are the specialist in this, you know, I need to go to that person. So let's talk a little bit about, there's so many things that we can talk about. We all know, we all feel it in our organizations right now, there is a real IT shortage. So aren't you guys glad that you all picked IT? I mean, there is job security. I mean, there is an IT shortage, but especially with women. And I think, you know, women make up 50% of the workforce, but in the STEM, they're only 28% of what's going on in STEM. So do you guys have any ideas? How can we, all of us in the room, encourage the next generation? Because it's going to be really important as the boomers start to retire. We hear this, you know, there's going to be a lot more jobs than there are people to fill those jobs. So does anybody have some ideas? What can we do as women to encourage the next generation?
I have a couple short thoughts before I pass the mic on. The first one is you want to be looking at the entire workforce with an open mind, right? All your potential employees, not just people that come through really traditional paths and look just like everybody else in the department and things like that. So I'm working to get my company to do like anti-discrimination training for all hiring managers, because so much of it is unconscious. People don't even realize, you know, there's all sorts of stats about what your name is or what your gender is on your resume influences whether you get a call, right? I mean, those are just, that's just the fact. And so I think the only way you can fight that type of thing and really look at everyone out there that you may want to hire is to kind of bring that unconsciousness to the forefront. And so you can resist it, right? Because you got to do that. So looking at the entire population out there that you could be hiring is one of the things. And then the other thing is I really, really want to get, I love the idea of like going around to high schools and giving talks to kids about IT, because I think IT is so much more fun than anybody real. Than
so
the
can
like,
we
like,
sign
they
you up,
like if they
Michelle?
Like,
can we sign you up to do that?
I need a really good presentation. I want it to be good. But like, you know, it's like if they don't like video games, they think they won't like IT, and that has nothing to do with it, right? You know what I mean? Like, I really want to go to high schools and go say, give me all your really girls that are really good at math. I want to talk to them, you know? So I think that type of thing, that you start early so that they're looking at a career in IT, is key. And everybody, not just the boys that were playing a lot of video games, not just them, but all of us.
Yeah, and maybe just to add to that, I think it's really about the diversity, right? And stressing that IT is really changing versus what is that traditional definition that we had of IT, right? When people think IT, they think hardware, well, now cloud maybe. Server, right, and the help desk, and so
the actual PC or something.
Yeah, and I can tell me again, my job, it's all about just digitization, and it's about every single part of the organization becoming digital and thinking in a very different way. And I think women have some traits that are really important when it comes to fostering a diverse environment. I mean, there's a lot of collaboration, there's a lot of sense of empathy, understanding others, overall collaboration and teamwork. And I think we need that to foster different environments. If we hire the same type of people, we're going to get the same type of outputs. And right now, if companies think that they with the same type of outputs, they're going to still be here in 10 years, then they're mistaken, because every single company is being disrupted, every single industry is being disrupted. And so we need to foster very different mindsets and very different creative thinking. And I think that's something that can excite people. The story about being part of that bigger trend that we're all seeing today, that's something that can attract people in from very different backgrounds. Again, I have no technical backgrounds, but also even within the different technologies and maths and evil, we're going to need every single one, not just mathematicians or developers. We're going to need psychologists, linguists. We're going to need a very diverse set of people to come up with new ideas and drive it forward. So I think that's the message. And it's about diversity. It's about inclusion and getting our young female talent to see that and understand that and see that opportunity.
Well, that's a perfect segue. So really, I mean, you talked about digitization. I mean, everything is digital these days, right? Mary Hager is the CIO for Amber, and I remember talking to her one day, and she said, you know, all roads lead to technology in today's world. So that's a perfect segue. What do you guys see out there that's on the horizon, some really cool technology that is going to be really disruptive that's here now or coming down the road? Somebody want to take that? Holly or Jennifer, one of you guys?
I'll answer your question a bit different. I think for me, when I think about disruption and technology, it's all the things that are just under the covers that we have no idea about. Those are the things that have already been the disruptors to industries. Those are the things that I think will continue to surprise us. We're all talking about digitization. We're all talking about blurring the lines between business and IT. We're all thinking about how can we adopt our organizations to work smarter, define products better, manage products better. Those are all common things. And we've got some great large industry examples to follow, and everybody knows those. But in my mind, it's more, what are we not thinking about that's about to surprise us? There are some hot technologies following the typical bell curve. I don't know if they're really going to make huge splashes or not. Blockchain, it's going to have to be tackled in a more complete foundational way. I think it'll probably have some impacts in the financial industry, but it's going to have to be taken on more holistically versus slivers or bolt-ons. But that will probably have a big impact at some point, in my opinion.
So just following on to Holly's comment was around, well, I asked my team to download the CNBC app and go to the technology tab and read those articles. And if there's a word in there that they don't know or acronym Google is their best friend. So AI, ML, blockchain, biometrics is hot right now. And just on Tuesday morning, I was walking into the office at MasterCard and O'Fallon, and we have the new cool biometric where you just scan your hand and the gate's open. You don't have to badge in. And at that moment, it hit me, well, why do I have to pull out a card, or why do I have to pull out my phone to pay with Apple Pay? Why can't I just biometrically pay when I check out at Walgreens? Why can't I do that? And so I walked by our data scientist on the team and said, hey, Reza, what do you think about this? He's like, well, actually, they did that in South Korea, but it wouldn't scale. It's BioPay. So he sent me the article. And then it's just being open to those ideas on how do we make our life easier. And then my team challenged me that your phone's in your hand anyway. It's too hard. I said, well, okay. Yeah, so but I just think that's a cool technology to think through of you're busy and just scan your hand and go through. And there's all kinds of liability and trust and data and PII compliant. We will get through those. But it's just being open to those ideas of what would make my life easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just hit on a key there. What makes your life easier? So we have the iRobots in every room in our house, and I love it. It's like I come home, I think the housekeeper's been there. You know, it's wonderful. And who all has Alexa? You guys have Alexa? Yeah, I'm like every morning, what's the weather today, Alexa? You know, I mean, it's just awesome. So, but it makes your life easier, right? It really does. And so I think, Michelle, to your point, if you were to go into the high school and talk to kids, that's what you need to be talking about. I mean, technology can actually improve. And we're talking IT right here. But you think about what is going on in the biosciences and, you know, what's going on in medical research and things like that. You know, that, I mean, Teresa, you could talk to us about that with being a local pharma company here. So, you know, but it is, it's exciting and getting kids to see that listen, it can improve lives. Technology can improve lives. It's not just gaming, right? Okay, well, let's talk about, you know, I'm going to ask you guys, I'd like for each of you guys to answer this question if you can. So you know a lot more today than you knew a long time ago, right? So hopefully, right? I don't know. Sometimes I think as I get older, I realize I don't know anything. Yes, I don't know anything. But what would you say, knowing what you know today, what would you tell your younger self?
I would probably tell her to believe in herself and trust in her capabilities. I think that took a while for me, which is just kind of crazy. And I don't really know why, because I guess underneath it all, I knew, but it just took a little while to come out.
Mine's probably general life advice, which is just to enjoy the ride, right? Like, it's not about, okay, when I get there, I can enjoy that, or when I get that promotion, I can enjoy that. But enjoy what you're doing. You said earlier, don't do a bunch of stuff that you hate, too. Like, so work your tail off at work. Do your best at all times, because it's not about where you go. It's about the journey.
Very similar, actually. I would just say, you know, follow your heart and sometimes take a leap of faith, because you never know where you're gonna go. I love driving around, not knowing where I am, and taking a different route just to get lost. I'm sure I'll find something new, or I'll discover something. I love it. My husband always thinks I'm crazy. But I just like doing that and enjoy the ride, right? And everything you do, don't think about it too much, because ultimately you will learn something and you will take that into your next steps.
I don't know that I have anything to add on to that. With each one, yep. I think that with my younger self, in addition to all that, I would encourage myself to try to be more open and giving earlier on.
Mine is everything's going to be okay. You're right where you need to be at the right time with the right people coming into your life and out of your life, both. And just enjoy that moment, work hard. Anytime I'm in a conversation for a mentor-mentee relationship, it's, you know, well, how did you get to where you are? It's like, I didn't ever really worry about the next step. I enjoyed what I was doing. I work hard. It's kind of just that, it's not frustration. It's, there's something else I could be doing. What else is it that I could be doing? Because I've done this and I enjoy it. And then it's just kind of seeking out those opportunities. Are they... It just happens. It just aligns. And I think it's everything's going to be okay.
I hope you guys were all taking notes. Yes, one more
thing. I think you mentioned something similar to this earlier, but something my grandmother would say growing up is you're a sum total of your experiences, and something you touched on is the people leaving. It's even when you're in a tough or negative situation, there's always something good to take out of that, and that just helps build your snowball, I think, is what you were mentioning earlier, but everything helps to build you, and you are that sum total.
Love that. Okay, so I'm going to ask you one last question, and then we're going to open it up for the audience, because I'm sure you all have some questions you want to ask. So I launched a podcast called Something Extra, and we have a little girl with Down syndrome. She's 23, so she has an extra 21st chromosome scientifically, but, you know, what I talk about is that she's got a lot of something extras, extra gratitude, extra acceptance of people. I mean, the list just goes on, extra joy. But I feel like every person is uniquely designed. Every person was gifted with a something extra. So talk to me a little bit. I'd like for each of you guys to think about this question. What do you think is the something extra, like in a leadership role that every leader needs? Teresa?
Endurance. And Lisa knows, in addition to just enduring through good times, bad times, I also run ultra marathons. So I'm really good at enduring. So my something extra is endurance.
Say two things. One is that a leader has to care about their people. And I would guess that all of you would say that it's true about your teams, is that you have to care about them. You have to do everything you can every day to make the environment one in which they can thrive, that they feel, you know, comfortable and appreciated and motivated, that they're tied to the mission of the organization and to what's going on. It's your job to bring the vision down to them. And then also that a leader just has to be able to think outside the box and question the status quo and question what we're doing and be ready to engage with the rest of the business on any idea that comes your way or that you want to take to them. You have to be that collaborative person.
Good. Yay.
So my first one would be passion. Enjoy what you're doing and have a passion for what you do, and it will show, and it will brighten your day. It will brighten somebody else's day as well, because the worst thing is going into the office and meeting somebody who's depressed or who's complaining, mm-hmm. right? So if you have a passion, you have energy, people will follow you. And the second one is curiosity to learn, curiosity to try new things, to listen what others have to say, listen and really learn. And those are my two.
I would say that in my environment, patience and being thick-skinned helps me. We can be a bit of kind of a punching bag, but being able to take that and not let it bring you down and be able to continue to be that rock and inspiration and leader to bring everyone along through the rough times.
So strictly from a leadership perspective, the leaders that I follow and I aspire to be is having that servant's heart. So when it's you're in that space and from a people manager perspective, from that leadership side of, it's really understanding your employees and your team and where do they want to be and how can you help them get there? Because if you see that spark in someone and you know that they have something there, but it may not be aligned to their path from their personal journey that they're on. So it's really understanding your role as a leader is really bringing out the best in that employee and being able to identify that and have the conversation to get them to where they want to be.
That's a great point. Awesome. Awesome, you ladies. And so Jennifer, on that note, when you serve the people that you're leading, do you think engagement goes up or down? The engagement of the people.
I hope it goes up.
Yes.
Or else I'm failing.
Right.
And I have a great leader. He's definitely leads by example. He has that servant's heart. And truly, I just read an article recently. If you're working for someone that doesn't believe in you, probably time to make a change. Because I just think that, like to your point, who wants to go in and just every day know that your leader doesn't believe in you and doesn't see that? So it's, I think, truly important to have that on both sides.
Great. Okay, so we want to open it up to you guys, and you want to take my mic so that these guys can pass along.
Hi, my name is Lakeisha Tomlin, engineering manager. So with all of your busy schedules and your executive responsibilities, how do you maintain some sense of balance? And basically what I mean by that is, how do you set those hard boundaries to maintain somewhat of a personal life?
My professional life and personal life flow in and out. So in the morning, get up, check my email, do a few calls. Something urgent happened yesterday morning. I made a call into an individual, just put my earbuds in and said, hey, Chris, I have to call you because I can't respond to your email because I'm braiding Lena's hair right now. And so while I'm on the call with him, putting out a fire, I'm braiding my daughter's hair, telling my son, hey, it's PE day. Do you have your uniform? And it's just flows and that understanding. I attend chapel every Wednesday morning with my kids. When I interviewed for my current position, I talked to my now boss and said, hey, if this works with the schedule, you know, would that be something that's possible? I will work at 10 p.m., 2 a.m., whatever it is. We have a global team, so a lot of times I'm on calls early morning or late night. But that Wednesday morning from 8:30 to 9:15, can I have that? He's like, absolutely. Have I missed chapel? Of course, for executive conversations or customer meetings. But as a whole, I just ask and have the conversation, and usually people are pretty willing, as long as you're willing to put in the work on the other side.
I was going to say, I think a lot of it's about setting realistic expectations at work and articulating what can get done at work. If you always just take on more, even if you aren't going to be able to get it done, you're just going to disappoint people. And so it's about looking someone directly in the eye and, you know, talking about what you can do and when that's going to happen. And, well, you know what, if I have another resource, I could do this. So it's about communicating well, can set limits on the amount of time to put in. Now, that's if you're working for a reasonable person, right? And so if you're not, that's probably time to start looking, right? Look from a position of strength before you quit. But, you know, so if you're working for a reasonable person, you need to, it is your job to communicate well so that you can go home at the end of the day. And I always have felt like there's so much you can do in IT that if I don't put a limit on when I'm going to stop, I could work 12 hours a day, every day of the week. And I don't. And I've actually always chosen not to. But it's up to me to make that reasonable. No one will tell me to work less. And by less, I don't mean like work 20 hours a week. I mean like no one will tell me to keep it reasonable. If I'm willing to work a million hours a week, they're going to let me. So I always try to set reasonable expectations. And I try extremely hard to set reasonable expectations within my department too, so that all my people can also go home at the end of the day and let go.
Is it okay if a guy talks? So Petra and Lisa, you both talked about how everything's becoming digital. And you're talking about digital transformational, digital disruption, and everything like that. So what's interesting is there's this new thing up and coming called digital citizenship. And how do you see the role of digital citizenship interlaying within your organization and beyond, as some of you have addressed moving forward? Just random thoughts, because it was a random question.
So I'm going to answer. Tell me if that's what you're looking for, and you know, we can follow up as well. So yeah, digital transformation for us as a company, it's not just for looking internally at how we digitize, how we automate our operation. It's also around how we treat our customers differently, and also knowing that our customers have different expectations from us and overall in their daily life. We're all consumers. We are all connected 24 hours a day. We all have our iPhone that if we lose it, we freak out because it has all, you know, half of our life in a machine. So the expectations are very much changing in society and for companies. And so I think that's really what we are trying to respond to. So we're trying to interpret those needs now, but also the future needs and work towards that. That's more of our company point of view. And when it comes to buyer, it's really around offering tailored solutions. It's around using big data so that you can make a trillion or more different combinations. You can find out the right one for that specific customer and you can offer that. Before technology, we would not have been able to even process that, right? So technology is just opening new arenas that we were never even able to play in. And I think that role that we have within IT of having access and being able to use all those new technologies, it also comes with a big responsibility. it comes with, and I recently had a TED talk around AI, right? And the title was, it's not human versus AI, it's human plus AI. But there's also, there's a certain responsibility as well in terms of how you use those technologies and what you do with them. And I think it's important to think about the human aspects to make sure that ethically we're doing the right thing and to use technology to augment the possibilities that we all as humans and as consumers have. And I think that's where we have that responsibility. We need to strike the balance. And that's where you get to responsible use of technology as well. I don't know if that's where you're going towards.
I just really wanted to ask you, because of the things, the topics that you were bringing up, I was just putting your opinion, and that was a great answer.
All right.
Good. Thank you, Petra. Other questions?
Hi, my name is Desiree Adeboye. And most of you mentioned that you had some type of mentor upon your development. And I'm just curious, do you have any women that you sponsor or mentor now? And you're the mentor? And then if so, how were those relationships initiated?
So I personally had two mentors. Well, I had multiple, but I had two. One was a female mentor I met at the start of my career in marketing, who always asked me, when you get to your next promotion and you send out that email announcing what you've done previously, what is it going to say? So that it always kept me top of mind of, okay, what am I going to do that makes a difference? And the other person was actually that IT director that helped me move into IT, and that, you know, he moved on as well, but he's in a different company now, but we've always kept in touch and just had that very open candid conversation, whether it was work-life balance, right? Whether it was, hey, I'm having twins, do you think they're going to fire me now? conversation. So all of those things. And I think once you get the richness and you have that experience, you want to pass that on as well. So I have various ongoing conversations with people. Normally they're within the company, whether it's a monthly lunch, whether it's going out for a drink, people reaching out and saying, hey, would you mind having a chat once in a while? So it's not necessarily a very formal one, but it is really keeping in touch with people and understanding some of the challenges and hopefully offering some advice there as well. Yeah.
So I've actually never had a female mentor, and I'm currently mentoring someone and they're not a female either. But it's always been organic. I've not been involved in a formal mentorship program before. It's really just about, for me, I've been approached by my mentors in the past, but who I'm mentoring now, we were crossing paths periodically in kind of parallel groups, and he approached me based off of my domain knowledge in our company, but it's always been organic for me as well.
I wanted just to say, so this will help you as a mentee. You know, the mentor, people can't read your mind. So the thing is, understand what it is that you need. I think that's really good to get clear on that. And then just find somebody that you admire or that has that skill that you're lacking, and then ask them. And, you know, I mean, everyone's busy, but I will say most of the time they will give you something. Okay. And Cheryl Batchelder is a good friend of mine. And Cheryl was the CEO of Popeye's Chicken and actually took it from $13 a share up to, they sold at $79 a share. It was an amazing turnaround for quick food service. And Cheryl, we were talking, and she said the thing is with her mentees, she always requires them, though, to come prepared. Come prepared with your top three questions. So I'm speaking into you as a potential mentee of someone. Just know that your mentor will be appreciative of that, because they can't read your mind. They don't know what it is that you need. So if you can be really clear about that, you're going to get the best experience from that. That makes sense?
And I think, too, just always be open to that organic type of mentorship, which is what I try to do at my company, too. We don't have a formal program, but, you know, just trying to build relationships with women in the company, or men too, but, you know, younger women in the company coming up that I think have potential or I'm excited about, I do try to help them, and I'll stop by HR, just like you said, the sponsor, stop by HR and just put in a good word, like, oh, you know, that person, man, she really seems on top of blah, 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 you know, just trying to help out people, and that, you know, invite them to lunch, things like that, that kind of organic things. So be open to that, and I think, Lisa, you have a really good point. If you get that kind of response from somebody, someone speaking to you, do come prepared and with ideas and talk.
Thank you so much. So I will ask the last question, and in our next part of the session, you all get to kind of ask more questions from these amazing women. So my next question is for Teresa. Can you help me learn more about, as a CIO female, which is amazing, you give hope to a lot of us that, yes, there is a path, and yes, we can do it, and yes, there are opportunities provided to us. Can you share with us, what are you doing to promote women in your organization that maybe a lot of my colleagues here, and especially my boss in the room, can kind of get some tips on how do we promote women in organizations? So what are you doing about that?
It's participate in the decisions that happen at the MTR level. So know your people. I would say what I generally have to do with the women is the same thing that somebody had to do with me, which is look at the things, what was in my suitcase? What did I have in terms of innate talents and capabilities and personality, and where can that be applied? And so probably the biggest thing I do is I talk to people about what they're doing, what they like that they're doing, what they don't like that they're doing, so that when those times come that I can find opportunities, whether they're within my area or in another part of the business, I know that person, what they've done, where they've been, what they're capable of, what they don't want to do, because that can be just as important, and I'm putting forward the names for those folks. When I do that, then it comes with a level of responsibility on my part to make sure that I'm checking in periodically with that person and making sure that they do have the confidence to perform in the role, because most of the time with us girls, that's where it's at, and that they have the connections that they need. So I spend a lot of time in the sponsorship role at this point in my career, where I'm working behind the scenes talking about the people that are within the company, and I'm moving things behind the scenes for the people that I have put forward.
Okay. Wow. Ladies, thank you so much. Thank you so much. This has just been amazing. We want to give them a hand. And like I said, I hope you guys took really good notes. But if you didn't, we recorded it. So we'll let you guys know when this is going to drop. But thank you guys again. It was wonderful.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.